Good morning, WMNFers, and welcome back to Midpoint, your mid-morning, mid-week, mid-Florida source for news and public affairs with a local perspective. I'm Shelley Reback, and we have a really informative show for you today on the state of public education in Florida. My guests today are Noren Dollard, who is Senior Policy Analyst and Director of Florida Kids Count for the Florida Policy Institute, and Damaris Allen, Executive Director of Families for Strong Public Schools. Probably nobody is more up to speed on the state of public education in Florida today than these two women who have been activists and analysts in the public education space for many years. But before we get into our discussion on education, as is our custom, I want to bring a couple of Florida-centric news items to your attention. First, in the category of it is always all about the grift with these guys, Florida State Senator and former chairman of the Republican Party of Florida, Joe Gruters, Republican of Sarasota, is pitching investment opportunities in a startup property insurance company in Florida. This is a great time for a new business venture by an insurer, right after the Florida legislature allowed them to charge higher rates across the board and impose new statutory limits on litigation to make it harder for homeowners to get their claims paid. An editorial in the Miami Herald this week called it one of the most tone-deaf moves that a lawmaker could make as homeowners struggle with escalating premiums while the insurance industry enjoys some cost relief thanks to the reform legislation approved in the last 18 months, all the while keeping premium rates astronomically high. Joe Gruters, an accountant by trade, reportedly sent potential investors, including some fellow lawmakers, information on startup Village Protection Insurance, promising them potential returns of 165% over 5 years, the Herald and the Tampa Bay Times reported. It is really all about the grift with these guys. In a bit of good news, Florida is halfway to putting abortion rights on next year's ballot. The citizen-led ballot initiative by Floridians Protecting Freedom is a campaign to let voters decide whether to make a constitutional amendment specifically protecting abortion rights. They have a goal to collect 1.25 million signed petitions, and they still need about 892,000 valid signatures by February 1st to get it on the ballot. They have already reached the signature amount to trigger a state Supreme Court review of the ballot language, which naturally the state attorney general, Tampa's own Ashley Moody, is opposing and trying to frustrate the campaign to get the measure before the voters. Because when has Ashley ever been working on behalf of the people of Florida? And even if the ballot language gets past the state Supreme Court, which is now wholly owned by Governor DeSantis, the effort will still need support from 60% of Florida voters to succeed. But there's still hope. A 2022 poll from Florida Atlantic University found that 67% of Floridians want abortion legal in all or most cases, and other states, even some conservative states like Kentucky and Kansas, have also recently voted to support abortion access. So if you haven't yet signed the petition to place abortion on the ballot, and if you'd like to, or if you want to help collect signatures, go to FloridiansProtectingFreedom.com. Of course, right now, Florida abortion access is in limbo because the case interpreting whether or not the existing constitutional amendment that protects privacy includes protection for abortion rights as a private matter. And that case is still pending before the Florida Supreme Court. So as of now, the 15-week abortion ban is still the law in Florida, despite our Republican Florida legislature passing a 6-week ban last session. That 6-week ban will only go into effect if and when the Florida Supreme Court decides that the current constitutional privacy amendment does not cover abortion rights. And we don't know when that court decision will be issued. My bet is that the decision won't come out until DeSantis drops his presidential campaign, because abortion rights are popular, and the DeSantis court will not want to hurt his quest for the presidency by issuing a decision that may not be popular with the voters. So now let's get to our main topic, the state of public education in Florida today. And remember, you are all welcome to call or write into the show with your questions and comments at 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. I want to welcome Noren Dollard, Senior Policy Analyst and Director of Florida Kids Count for the Florida Policy Institute. I'm happy to have you with us, Noren.
Good morning, Shelley. Thank you so much for having me.
And Damaris Allen, Executive Director of Families for Strong Public Schools. It's good to have you back on Midpoint, Damaris.
Good morning. Happy to be here again.
Let me start with you, Noren. Tell us, what's the Florida Policy Institute? This is something different from the Florida Policy Project that Jeff Brandis recently started, right?
Yes. The Florida Policy Institute, we're a nonpartisan, nonprofit research group. We're multi-issue. I focus on education, but we have analysts working in safety net, healthcare, worker justice, immigration justice, and our primary focus is budget, tax, and revenue that supports Floridians' ability, so that Floridians' ability to thrive and prosper, so all Floridians have access to that opportunity.
All right. And Damaris, Families for Strong Public Schools, is that a new organization?
Yes, we're a relatively new organization. We've been around for about a year and a half. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization as well that came together because we saw a need to support parents who are interested in making our public schools better, who are interested in advocating. And so what we really do is bring people and groups together to advocate for public schools that serve all students.
And is this a Florida-based organization, or is it around the country?
We are a Florida-based organization.
Okay. So let me ask the $64,000 question, ladies. What is the state of public education in Florida right now? Who wants to start with that? I can start and say it looks pretty dim from where I sit, but tell me what you see.
I would agree that it looks pretty dim. We're really concerned about the siphoning of dollars to go to private schools and to homeschool students. We're concerned about all students' voices being heard and being valued. But we're also hopeful. So I think it's really important to recognize that even though it's been very bad in Florida and getting progressively worse, people are starting to pay attention. They're asking how to get involved. They're asking how to get engaged. And that engagement can change the trajectory of the future.
Well, let's start with a big topic like school vouchers and remind us what the legislature did this year and what we now know about the effect of this massive increase in the availability of voucher funding on public education.
In the spring, in the last legislative session, we now have universal vouchers. They're called scholarships in Florida, and anyone with a child, K through 12, any income level, is able to access a voucher to send their child to a private school, or homeschool. Children who are homeschooled are now eligible as well. And we know that we were already sending $2 billion in public dollars to private schools last school year, and we estimate it's going to cost $4 billion this year. The data are still becoming available, are slowly becoming available. We know that Step Up for Students, who's one of the scholarship funding organizations, you know, they tweeted in August already that they had made 400,000 awards to students Now, awards are not children who are enrolled, but the numbers of folks seeking to obtain these vouchers is rapidly escalated.
Let me be more specific in my question. So Step Up for Students is administering the voucher program, right?
Yeah, it's one of two organizations.
Yeah,
that do
and
that.
And there was a recent report issued that showed some of where this money is going. And a couple things that struck me about it was we've seen reporting about vouchers being used for trips to Disney World, for purchasing 15-inch screen TVs and kayaks. And so what do we really know about how the vouchers are being used?
I think that's one of the most concerning pieces, right? So parents can spend up to $500 on Disney tickets. If we saw our public schools spending dollars in that way, we would be outraged. There'd be a line out the school district's door.
Yeah.
And it's also a terrible return on investment. It's not unusual for a school to purchase a TV. However, that same TV that's going to serve one or two students that are homeschooled in a public school would serve 2,000, 3,000, thousands of students. So it's not a great use of dollars either.
Right. And I also noted that 7 in 10 new scholarship awards are going to students who are already enrolled in private school at what I think your organization, Noren, the Florida Policy Institute, estimates is a $676 million cost to the state. So this is more than triple the initial estimate of the Florida House for what vouchers were going to cost. And this money's going to subsidize tuition that families were already paying, an average of $8,000 that they can now use for other purposes. So like these private school families got an $8,000 bonus this year.
Tax-free
bonus. Yeah, mm-hmm. Tax-free bonus. And this $8,000... How does that compare with the amount that the legislature is funding per student in our public education system?
It's exactly the same.
It's exactly the same. So a student who goes to a public school is priced out at $8,000, and that $8,000 has to be spent on labor costs for teachers, on air conditioning for the school, on the TV that's going to serve 2,000 students that you just mentioned, on, aides, cafeteria services, maybe even transportation costs to school. That same $8,000 is going to one family for their homeschool student, potential homeschool student or private school student, as is going into the funding of maintaining our public school system per student per head, right?
Yes. excuse me. There is, I think there's a misconception when you hear people talking about, well, the money's following the child. If a child's own has never been in public school, the money cannot follow the child because the child was never there to begin with. So you're expanding the responsibility of the schools. The other thing that is not accounted for is the money leaves, but the full cost of educating our students is not reflected in that. So all the fixed costs that you're talking about, you know, buses and faculty and staff, they're still there. And our school districts are huge. I mean, we have some of the largest school districts in the nation.
Yeah, we're like 7th or 8th in the nation, aren't we?
Yeah, Hillsborough County. Yeah, and Miami's, I think, 3rd.
Well, another thing that struck me from this reporting that we got from Step Up for Students a couple months ago was that something like 54,000 of the new enrollees, like 44% of people getting these vouchers are from families making over 400% of the federal poverty level, which is, for example, over $120,000 of income a year for a family of four.
Yeah.
So 44% of the voucher money is going to families that are quite well-to-do.
Right. Right. And I think that's one of the issues is it doesn't, this program doesn't benefit the average Floridian, right? Because you think about it, the $8,000 isn't enough for most private schools, right? Yeah. So for most of the accredited private schools, I think that's another piece that we need to mention is most are not accredited. And so they're required to come up with that shortfall. And then we don't take into account that additional services are offered at our public schools that are not at our private schools. So free breakfast, the potential for free lunch, food bank, like all of these wraparound services that we saw were so needed during the pandemic that we were insistent that public schools open for, we have forgotten that they are major providers of those things.
And they cost money. They cost money. So increasing the financial burden on our public schools while decreasing the availability of funds to pay for these additional services that people are demanding. All right, you're listening to Midpoint on WMNF Radio 88.5, and we're talking about Florida public education with my guests and you, if you'd like to call or write in with your questions and comments to 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. I'm almost reluctant to move off the topic of vouchers because there's so much to say about it. How is the accountability of how these funds are being spent? We've seen the reporting a little bit about the purchasing of TVs and kayaks and Disney tickets for homeschoolers. But in general, have we seen enough accountability for how these funds are being spent?
I would argue no, though we have not. And I think that has to be a primary strategy for putting some guardrails on vouchers. Private schools are not held to the same standards as public schools and homeschools.
And I think that's really important to recognize. The thing I mentioned earlier about how most of the schools aren't accredited, about 65% aren't accredited. It says on the DOE's website, if your child is going to go to school, to one of these schools, you need to check to make sure that if they plan to go to college, if their institution accepts that diploma. And our teachers aren't required to have a degree. All of those things are not in place in those private schools.
There has to be academic accountability for students as well. I mean, public school students are held to higher standards. Private school and homeschoolers now have to take normal reference tests, but they are not directly comparable to those in public schools, so it's hard to understand our return on investment. Fiscally, yes, as well. We need to understand not just this year, but going forward, is the legislature going to continue to fund these at this rate? I mean, some of the vouchers rely on tax credits. They do not come directly from public general revenue for schools.
Right, the corporations are getting tax benefits.
Correct, and if the economy is not sustained at its current level, are they going to be able to live up to those? Is the legislature going to backstop that so families continue to get their awards? So there's accountability in many different directions that really needs to be solidified for all students who receive public dollars.
All right. Well, that's a very discouraging issue to move off of, but I think we need to talk about teachers. Again, from my reading, vacant positions are skyrocketing in Florida. Vacant teaching positions are rising by 21% compared to the previous year and more than by 200% since 2018. By 200% more teacher vacancies since 2018. Mm-hmm. The state is experiencing a significant deficit in qualified teachers, particularly in core subjects like science, math, even special ed teachers and English as a second language teachers, which are fundamental to the whole point of public education. So where are we now? I mean, I think we're like 48th in teacher salaries in the nation. And according to the National Education Association, the average annual salary of a teacher in Florida during the 2020 to 2021 school year was just over $51,000 a year. And that's one of the lowest teacher salaries in the nation. So staffing, salaries, and the school experience all seem to be at their lowest levels in Florida.
Well, and instead of, and that's what's so disheartening, instead of investing in one system, which is what we're supposed to be doing, right? Instead of investing
under the Constitution.
Instead of investing in one system and improving it, we are siphoning off funds to multiple systems, and we're putting the burden on the parents instead of requiring us to have these funds. And so, you know, we're finding that classes are bigger than ever because they're having to combine. We're seeing schools that don't have whole departments. There was a high school that didn't have a physics department last year for the entire year. And teachers just can't keep up because in addition to all of these pressures, in addition to salaries not matching the cost of living, we have all this external pressure from groups that want to create chaos. And so I'm seeing, you know, my kids were in Hillsborough County Public Schools up until last year. My youngest graduated, and we're seeing his favorite teachers are no longer teaching anymore. And these are people that they would get in the car and say, I'm so excited that this person is teaching me AP US history or physics or any of these things. And so, you know, the bottom line is if when we don't value teachers, when we don't treat them as partners in educating our kids, our kids are the ones that lose out. They lose the opportunities that they could potentially have moving forward.
Yeah, and the underfunding of public education in Florida is not a new phenomenon, you know, since the Great Recession. And this is, I mean, there has been greater investment in teacher pay, you know, but as Damaris points out, there's now three systems of education, but we were already so far behind in our investment in public education that it's very difficult to, even with those investments, it's really hard to catch up to our counterparts in other states.
Let me take a call from Michelle, who's been very patient. Michelle, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for taking my call. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am actually a recipient of Step Up for Students vouchers. My son was in public schools up until the end, well, the very first part of third grade. The public school system was not working for him at all. And I'm not one of these people who don't think public schools should have money going into them. And I 100% feel like there's so many problems with public schools for decades now, even when they started putting money in from the so-called lottery. You know, it's just the schools are so underfunded. There's so many problems. There's so many politics. And basically, I do receive the Step Up for Students scholarship. But I'm not one of these people who gets extra money for TVs and kayaks. I don't even know what that's about. But my situation is Step Up for Students sends the money directly to my son's private school, which is a secular school. And he has thrived so much better in this private school. And I am a single mom, so I can't afford to send him to this private school. This private school costs over $7,000 a year. So I'm very thankful for Step Up for Students so that my son has an opportunity outside of public school, because like I said, public school was just riddled with issues and has been for decades. And I don't want him to become one of these kids that gets lost in the system in public schools because the politicians are not funding the schools the way they should be.
Well, you know, Michelle, isn't it kind of a chicken egg thing? I mean, how much better could public schools be to serve the needs of kids like your son if they had the funding to do it, to get better, you know, to develop the programs and to have the qualified teachers and to have smaller classes and to, you know, have whatever, to meet the needs of whatever you felt were not being met for your son when he was in public school. I mean, they can't get better without funding. And, you know, so the thing about vouchers is the vouchers is removing their ability to get better.
Well, my whole thing is I'm 52 years old, and there's been issues in the public school system with kids since I was a young person. And after all these decades, and I'm not seeing any improvement in it, like, it's not the people in the public school system. It's the politicians who refuse to put the money into the system and fix the issues. Like, you can stand up.
Well, hold up. You say they refuse to put the money into the system, but in fact, the money's being siphoned from the system by vouchers.
But by history, they have never, as far as I've been alive, put the proper amount of money into the public school system. And I'm tired of waiting for it to happen. So I'm actually thankful that my son has the opportunity to go to a secular private school, me being a single mother. And that money goes directly to his school. And I have zero, I don't even touch that money. There's nothing that comes through my hands to where I am able to spend it on a kayak or TV or anything like that. So I'm just speaking in, like, I'm pro Step Up for Students because the politicians haven't done anything in decades to help the public school system. And so I'm just tired of waiting.
Well, then maybe the answer to what you're complaining about is to change the politicians.
Yeah.
And, you know,
how many decades have I been voting for? And I'm sorry, I'm not putting my son's future in, and I don't trust. No, Florida is a Republican state, and they say that their value is with children and pro-life and all this stuff, but they never put their money where the mouth is. And I've been voting my whole life since I was able to. And I'm sorry, I'm not one of these people that's not going to stop. You know, I'm not going to stop voting or anything like that. I do what I can, but I'm not stupid enough to think that this is going to change anytime soon because it hasn't in my life.
I understand. Every parent, you know, is focused on their own kid. Thank you for calling in with your perspective, Michelle. I appreciate it. And thanks for being a listener to WMNF.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I can completely empathize with Michelle, but I think we have to go back to this is the plan, right? This is the plan. They want to defund public schools. They want public schools not to exist. And this is a well thought out plan that has been calculated over the years that really started in the 50s.
Let's be specific. Who's they? Who are you talking about? I think I know, but who are you talking about?
They're are people who are anti-public education.
Republicans?
You know I can't say it, so I'll let you say it. And there are some, to be fair, there are privatizers on both sides of the aisle. One tends to be stronger in one side, but there are privatizers on both sides of the aisle. And I think we have to reclaim our public schools. We have to say this is a value to all of us. It's not just about my kid. It's not just about your kid. This is about our future. This is about
our
economy. This is about our society. This is about our democracy. And we have to say that we won't settle for it anymore and demand more of our legislators, demand more instead of accepting the breadcrumbs that they're giving us and saying, oh, you go find a school that will accept your kid. Maybe not all kids, but your kid.
All right. I have Kirk on the line from St. Pete. Let me bring him into the conversation. Thanks, Kirk, for calling in.
Hey, good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
I want to let you know this has been going on quite a while, the funding of the schools. The Republican mantra is defund public education, and they're doing an exceptional job at their task at hand.
Yeah.
And I'd also like to bring up to the young lady that said the lottery money. The lottery money was supposed to enhance the school budget instead of take its place, and that's what they did. The party in power did the same thing. They just took the allocated money for funds for public schools. They took that away and supplanted it with income from the Florida lottery.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people are too aware of that fact. So we have the devil or, wait a minute, the fox watching the hen. Huh?
Yeah, you're right about the lottery, too. People think that that's supposed to add funds to school funding, and instead it's been supplanting legislative allocations for school funding. Well, thanks for calling in, Kirk. Appreciate your good work now. All right. Thank you. Thanks for being WMNF listener. Hey, if you want to call in with your comments about public education, give us a call at 813-239-9663. Our email is dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. All right, let's talk. Let's go back to talking about the teachers and the staffing in our schools, because to me, that's another huge problem. Again, I've read that we have a deficit of more than 8,000 open teaching positions in Florida between teachers and support staff. And is that correct? I mean, who's teaching our kids in public school these days? Who are the substitute teachers or permanent substitutes that are filling in for those 8,000 open spots? And I think I read somewhere that all you need now is a high school GED degree to teach in Florida now. Is that accurate?
That's in Miami. In Miami-Dade, you can have just a GED.
Is that a county-by-county issue that, like, the counties decide who can teach in their schools, or is it statewide?
Ish. Yeah, county by county.
I mean, there are state standards.
But apparently we're not meeting them. I mean, if you can teach a high school course with a high school GED diploma, I mean, come on.
Right. And I think, you know, and the challenge is when you look at how you think our teachers are paid poorly, you should look at what the subs are paid. And it's based on experience and education level. But it's not even close to a living wage. And you're going into an incredibly difficult situation where you're having to, you don't know the kids. You don't know what it's incredibly challenging. And we're seeing that we have pockets that have of schools and district areas of our district that have less coverage, right? Like that are dependent more on subs and long-term subs.
Yeah. And you do have to consider the economic conditions of, you know, where teachers can live. We have an affordable housing crisis in this state, and teachers can't afford to live in the districts.
Yeah,
that
I read
they
somewhere
teach in,
that that what you need to live in, say, Miami-Dade, was something like over $77,000 to be able to live in that county, and teachers are only paid $51,000. So, you know, right there, there's a deficit.
Well, and then we have the inequity that's driven by, so we have certain districts who have gone after additional millages, which are allowed to use to pay teachers. So then if you're in a county like Hillsborough that doesn't have a millage, but you're surrounded by counties like Pasco and Pinellas that do have millages, what's stopping teachers from leaving to go and be paid higher, especially if, say, in Pasco, the cost of living is lower? So now you're making more money.
And the cost of living is lower.
Or in North Florida, drive across the state line because you can.
Make more money
teacher,
in Georgia, right?
Teacher pay is higher.
Yeah. Okay. I know that DeSantis has launched a series of initiatives that were aimed at attracting teachers to Florida. I mean, I don't know why anybody would want to be a teacher in Florida. God bless everyone who's still teaching in Florida. But one of these initiatives was a military veteran to teacher pipeline that he was trying to develop that would allow men and women who served in the armed forces the ability to enter education spaces as instructors under the tutelage of an education mentor. And I have an email here from John who says, weren't we told that military veterans would be taking up the teacher slack? And he wants to know, has that helped? I know that there was criticism that state officials were bringing in additional unqualified teachers into schools because you don't need to be a qualified teacher to be in the military. You know, you can have a GED high school diploma and be in the military and now be a teacher if you want. So I don't know. How has that worked?
So last I checked, and to be fair, I haven't checked this year, eight teachers in the state of Florida.
Eight teachers came from the military as part of this military to teaching pipeline throughout the entire state of Florida. Eight people, military veterans.
Yes.
Stepped up to be a teacher under this program. Eight, John.
Right.
All right. Let me take a call from John in Port Richey. John, you've been patient. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, thanks for the show. I was just thinking about the lady that was called that said that the state isn't putting any money into the educational system. Well, they are. They're just putting it into the private educational system. With
right.
The South. So it's just where the state chooses to put the money. I don't know what she's waiting for, because the state's putting the money in there. They're just putting it into the private system.
And let me point out, too, that within this private educational system, there's also been a part of the big grift that so many of Republican cronies of our legislators, maybe their wives, their nephews, have gotten involved in these private charter school management companies and made a lot of money off these private schools.
Yeah. I got two words for you. Betsy DeVos, the federal education.
Betsy DeVos, yeah. Right.
The thing I want to point out, too, is that there really is no accountability with the private schools as with the public schools. I mean, when they do tests, like they have to be graded to be A-plus schools, they don't do that with private schools.
No, they do not.
If a private school buys property and they go defunct,
yep.
They can sell that property and put that money into their pocket.
So exactly. It's the grift, the big grift. You're right. Absolutely right. Thanks for calling in, John, from Port Richey. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right. He makes a good point, right? All right. I have a call here from Drew, too. Let me take this call from Drew in Bradenton. Drew, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
You have a comment about homeschooling, Drew?
I do, because I am the rare homeschooler, I always feel like, you know?
You are a homeschooler?
Well, I was homeschooled. I didn't get the option.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I mean, I'm middle-aged now, but, you know, I wasn't sent to a school. And I was then sent to a private school at 8th and 9th grade. And I started 10th grade, but didn't finish. Instead, I just decided to get a GED. Instead, I was like,
So what's your comment about whether you think Florida public education is dying in favor of homeschooling, or should die in favor of homeschooling, or what, you know, what's your comment?
My comment is that, you know, back in the 80s, my parents, particularly my mother, decided that homeschooling was a better option because the belief at the time, at least in some circles, was that the school system was going to teach children the incorrect truth. Or
so were you were you homeschooled in a religious setting?
No.
Secular?
Not at least not in the Christian, you know, like
okay.
Utah, people get really, you know, religiously schooled in that sense. Though we did move to Oregon from California because the laws were more favorable and you didn't have to be tested every year.
Well, you know, John, Drew, I'm sorry, but, you know, we're interested in your personal experience, but I want to turn some attention to the overall Florida experience.
My point is that in Florida, the same thing is happening now because
yes.
The political reasons that people are choosing these private schools or drifting towards homeschooling is for these political reasons that, you know, my parents chose. And that if we don't, you know, deal with those issues, then we won't change the direction.
All right, Drew. Well, I'm going to turn to my guests and ask them how we can best deal with those issues. I appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much. I want to point out relation to what Drew was just talking about. Just this week, there was an article in the Washington Post about the explosive growth in homeschooling since the COVID pandemic. Homeschooling has risen from this fringe thing that, like Drew was talking about, where it was unusual in the 80s to be homeschooled, to now it's the fastest growing form of education. So, like, what do you think makes so many people today think that they have the skills to adequately homeschool their children? And are these homeschooled children, being adequately educated to be good citizens? Good citizens, because isn't that what public school is all about, really? You know, training good citizens and preparing, kids to be adults and take their place to be contributing members of society. I mean, what does it mean that so many kids are being taken out of society, out of social circles, and being indoctrinated at home, whether it's, a religious indoctrination in a homeschool setting or a political indoctrination in a homeschool setting? What do you think about that?
First, I think it's important to recognize that people all along the political spectrum are choosing to do this, one, because their kids don't have access to a true history, and then the other side because they think that their kid is getting indoctrinated in school,
yeah.
Right? But I think it's concerning on multiple levels, right? We're so divided. We don't have the ability to communicate. And you think about one of those soft skills that you learn in school is how to communicate and have discussions with people who you disagree with.
Yeah.
And so what is a country, and we have a great example right now, look like with an entire generation who is used to being able to walk away from difficult situations, difficult conversations, to not feel discomfort? That was actually in language in a bill. Are we going to be able to survive as a democracy, or are we going to constantly be at odds?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there are, that's not my bailiwick, but my bailiwick does have to do with accountability and making sure children are getting an appropriate education. And yes, I agree that public schools are a common good. Let me just first and foremost. But I also believe that, students in public schools are held to a high standard. So we understand where they're, where they're doing well and where they need support. And we do not have that same level of understanding or confidence that these students are receiving those qualified. Yeah,
I mean, they're not subject to the same kind of standardized testing review. There's really little accountability for how the education in homeschool goes, right?
Right, and when you think about it, no person can be an expert in everything, right? And that's one of the beauties of having teachers. When your kids get to higher grades, they change classes, they have teachers who understand the subject matter on a deeper level. I know that I would do my child a disservice.
If I had to teach my kid math, we would be in trouble.
Exactly.
Right. My kid got a tutor in ninth grade. I'm just like, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
I need help.
Right.
He needs help.
Right. And there's no sort of qualification for homeschool parental teaching. I mean, there are these little groups forming now where they're hiring, all the teachers who are walking away from public school jobs and setting themselves up as private tutors or, homeschool educators. Right.
And there are ways to be appropriate and to educate your child yourself, but there are no requirements to do so, to hire certified, educators to review your child's
And I think it's important to recognize we're talking about where tax dollars go, right? This isn't about your right to homeschool.
Yeah.
This is about, is it appropriate for my tax dollars, for your tax dollars to subsidize your homeschooling?
And, I mean, homeschoolers in Florida before this have pretty good access to public school resources. They get Bright Futures and they can participate in
after school activities
and on sports teams and things like that. So we've had homeschool since, what, the 80s in Florida? And so, you know, those parents have been doing this for a very long time and
so
had a
benefit. So it's really about subsidizing parents' choice to homeschool. Okay, we have to talk about the school experience, too. The Parental Rights in Education Bill, otherwise known as Don't Say Gay, broadens constraints on sexual orientation and gender identity topics in schools from, it started from kindergarten to third grade, but now it goes from kindergarten to eighth grade, right? And the measure is one of the biggest culture war issues in Florida right now. It spawned the book bans, for example, in schools throughout Florida. And recent legislative action has expanded it up to the eighth grade. So we're now seeing, you know, this huge culture war situation that is on fire in school boards all across the state. And I want to know, how is it influencing public education in Florida?
It's definitely contributing to teachers leaving. It's definitely contributing to kids feeling frustrated. And I think it's really important to recognize what we do. This is not about parental rights. This is about control, because my parental rights begin and end with me. What there are some people interested in doing is imposing their viewpoint on others. And that is not parental rights. That's indoctrination. Mm-hmm. And so this is really about, how do we allow kids to be themselves? How do we allow them to be represented, their families to be represented in schools? And how can we get along in a way that doesn't force our view on another person?
Right. I'm going to take a quick call from Kelly in Bradenton. Kelly, you're on the air. Let's be quick, because I want to ask our guests here about upcoming legislation that we should be aware of. So welcome to Midpoint. Kelly in Bradenton, you with us? No? Okay. Well, then we have an opportunity here. I don't want to give short shrift to the Don't Say Gay bill, because it's extremely important recently. I know it is contributing to a lot of teachers leaving, either because they feel that they're not adequately able to represent themselves in the classroom, and because the law has been so vague and with such little or conflicting interpretations that we've seen teachers removing classroom libraries so that, you know, that time, that in-between time when kids have to just sit and quietly read in a corner, now, you know, there's no books. Because teachers are so worried that one of the books in their classroom library may be outside the parameters of the Don't Say Gay bill, for example. Things like that. It's created a real tense atmosphere in the public schools for teachers and kids. But I don't want to leave the show without having you talk to us about some things that we should be aware will be coming up in the next legislative session. So let's go there.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Looking forward, related to education, is there's currently a House Bill 49 that would undo child labor protections in Florida and providing guardrails for young people who are working and going to school. We're very concerned about this rollback and its influence on kids' education. We would urge you to visit our website, floridapolicy.org, to learn more about HB 49 and how it would affect child labor. Also looking forward, there are some bills that are out there related to conversion of charter schools that are concerning. There's a joint resolution that's currently withdrawn but may return around a homestead exemptions and removing the ability of schools to receive the taxes that they currently use fund their schools. So those are a couple. We do in general, want to be sure that we are increasing the guardrails for vouchers and really focus on defending and expanding funding to our public schools.
We are watching the same bills. I am very concerned about the conversion of charter schools.
Yeah, tell us what do you mean by that?
So basically, right now, you can vote to change your traditional public school into a charter school if the majority of teachers and parents who are in that school vote to convert that school. Now they want to remove the provision for teachers, which I'm concerned is going to contribute to the teacher shortage, right? Because if a teacher doesn't want to move with that school, they would leave. But then also there's a new charter school review commission that can approve this. And now municipalities in this bill can go and solicit this. And so they can encourage schools to peel off from traditional public schools. Why is that really concerning? One, it's a siphoning of funds. Two, it removes it from taxpayer oversight. So your charter schools have their own private governing boards, and they're not really as accountable to taxpayers as a regular traditional public school. And it's just another system for parents to navigate. So
yeah,
if you
and
have
also
challenges,
they don't have to take every kid. So
exactly.
if you're at a public school in your neighborhood public school turns into a charter school, and your kid is a kid that charter school decides they don't want as part of their school population, now you've lost your neighborhood school, right?
Exactly.
That's another problem that
exactly.
has nothing to do with money, but has a lot to do with education. So, okay. What bill is that, and where is it now in the legislative?
So nothing's really happening in the legislature right now,
except
for the special session.
But no,
we're technically having committees, but nothing has really moved through the committees yet. So the first stop for it is the Choice and Innovation Subcommittee. It's in the House. So as it starts to move, we will have calls to action around this, and you can find all of our calls to action at strongflschools.com. /take-action.
Okay. Well, strongflschools.com is the website for Families for Strong Public Schools. So
yes.
If you have an interest in that, go to that website. And your website?
FloridaPolicy.org.
Okay. I would encourage everybody because I apologize to Kelly who called back that we don't have time to take your call right now, but to go to these websites and educate yourself more to all our listeners, about the current status of public school and public education in Florida, because there is so much we need to be concerned about as we get into the next Florida legislative session. Is there anything on the special session that is about education quickly?
Yes, we're going to talk about the expansion of the vouchers as well during that.
Yeah, so that's coming right up. Oh, my goodness. Okay, and then I did want to mention that, the nation is in a widespread and deepening youth mental health crisis, too. So one of the topics we didn't get to cover is mental health resources in public education. Again, I would encourage you to go to the Florida Policy Institute's website and look at that, because there's a lot of information there too as well.
Yeah, probably a whole show could be.
Yeah,
sure.
Maybe we'll have you back to talk about that. I would just say that to our listeners, what people can do if they're concerned about public education in Florida to help improve it is vote. Vote, right? If you want to improve public education in Florida, be a public education voter. Vote for those candidates that support public education, that support greater funding and more accountability in the system. Well, that's all we have time for today, my friends. I want to thank my guests, Noreen Dollard from the Florida Policy Institute and Damaris Allen from Families for Strong Public Schools, for being with us to educate us on the current state of public education in Florida. We could do another whole show about this, and perhaps we will in the future. I want to thank you both for your very important work and your service to the educated community of Florida. I want to thanks also to my WMNF volunteers, Jessica Green, who runs my soundboard, and I guess DT is answering the phones for us today, so thank you. Oh, Greg. Okay, Greg is answering the phones for us today. So thanks to Greg, DJ Spaceship. We appreciate your extra help today. We just finished our fall fun drive, and we still came up a little short of our goal here on Midpoint. So if you can make a contribution to independent commercial-free community radio, please do so at WMNF.org/donate. And if you direct your contribution to Midpoint, I'd be very grateful. Remember, all our shows are archived and available as a podcast as well. So if you came in late or missed the show, you can always listen on demand. Now, please stay tuned for Talking Animals with Duncan Strauss. We are WMNF Tampa.